Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Fine Food Friday, January 17th. I'm Ray Graff. Many people try out diets or pledge to start eating healthier as part of their New Year's resolutions. We're doing the same here on Food Friday. In our case, it's a goal for the next 60 minutes or so. In the studio today to answer your healthy cooking and eating questions, two folks from the Nutrition Center in Western Massachusetts. Liz Weibrecht is the center's assistant director and the food adventures educator. Joining her is the center's clinical director and nutrition counselor, Anna Maria Moisa. If you have a question about improving your diet or how to cook healthy meals, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Diets, healthy cooking, your calls coming up on Food Friday after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today on Food Friday, we will try to extend some of those healthy eating New Year's resolutions. Here in the studio to help us are Liz Weibrecht and Anna Maria Moisa of the Nutrition Center in Western Massachusetts. Liz is the center's assistant director and the food adventures educator. Her passion for nutrition and whole foods began in childhood, organic gardening with her father. She has taught Growing Healthy Kids, a preschool food nutrition program in Florida, introducing whole foods to younger kids and emphasizing the importance of physical activity. Anna Maria is a licensed nutritionist with expertise in functional foods as preventative and therapeutic medicine. She counsels patients on dietary strategies for treating gastrointestinal disorders, eating disorders, obesity, heart disease, autoimmune conditions, and other chronic illnesses. She's the author of The Gut Microbiome, Exploring the Connection Between Microbes, Diet, and Health, published in 2017. She leads workshops on nutrition and gastrointestinal health, plant-based diets, and a mindful eating approach to weight management. If you have a question about dieting or healthy cooking, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Liz Weibrecht and Anna Maria Moisa, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much.
You two have been bumped more often than a roller derby team. I swear to you. You know, it's like you were on the first time, right? And it was about 20 minutes of a show or half an hour of a show. The president was speaking, right? And then the last time, I just found this out, you were booked last month or a few weeks ago.
At the end of last year.
Impeachment hearings.
Yep.
And here you are.
And here we are again.
Let's knock wood right now that nothing will happen. Welcome back and Happy New Year, both of you.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
For those who don't know, what does the Nutrition Center in Western Mass do?
So we inspire a healthy relationship with food through counseling, nutrition, and culinary education. We have counselors to see people for medical nutrition therapy, but we also have community nutrition where we make whole foods recipes with different folks, kids, adults, all different abilities, and have lots of fun with it.
Well, Liz and Anna Maria, you don't see each other very often.
We don't.
You have more than one location, and Anna Maria, you're kind of out and about, right?
Yeah. Liz and I are in pretty frequent communication, but we operate fairly independently. I am out in Northampton. I'm primarily at the Nutrition Center Northampton office, but I also see patients in Greenfield. My primary role with the Nutrition Center is doing the medical nutrition therapy, the individual nutrition counseling.
And I know you're a published author. And can you refresh our memory? It's basically mine. What the heck is a gut microbiome?
Yeah, so the gut microbiome basically refers to the population of microorganisms that live within the gastrointestinal tract.
How many are there?
Billions.
Billions?
Yes. Wow. It's we have quite a number, and the diversity really depends on the individual. But it's been a topic that's really attracted a lot of interest in scientific research because of its health on various organisms throughout the body.
I mean, give me an example of how the gut microbiome might affect someplace other than the gut.
So typically, when we have issues that might stem from the gut, so like imbalances within the gut, that can often trigger what's called inflammation. And when we have inflammation throughout our body, it can lead to a variety of chronic diseases, including heart disease, metabolic diseases like type 2 diabetes, even cancer has been linked to this sort of systemic inflammation.
So an imbalance of the things, the billions of things that live in your gut, could lead to heart disease or diabetes or even cancer.
It's basically a two-way street. So we don't know if it's a causative effect or if there's this sort of link between the imbalance that we see there and the increase in these diseases. It's kind of a bidirectional type of thing. So it's sort of an interesting area of therapeutic nutrition.
Well, let's talk nutrition here. And first we'll go to Liz. What is... You know, everybody has a resolution. What is the easiest one step? Let's not take 1,000 steps. Let's take one step for a healthier new year.
I agree with you, Ray. I think that this time of year, a lot of people concentrate on how they're going to make huge changes in their lives. And what's the tagline now? Vision 2020. We're all, you know, trying to figure out what our vision is for this year and
is
how we're going to make sure. Well, I've heard it
Nobody
around.
Tells
so,
me.
So what happens, I think, in the clinical world, which Anna Maria can talk about, but just change one thing. And especially when it's food that we're eating, we eat food every single day. What is one small thing and change that you can make, let's say for a month, let's practice it for a month and then incorporate that, make it a habit. And then next month, let's change another thing. And these are all making little, and then by the end of the year, you've made 12 changes. You've made them habits in your diet. And it could be with food preparation, it could be with ingredients, it could be with things that are part of what you do with your food every single day. But making a change with your body, you know, making a change in that is a tough thing to do. So don't overwhelm yourself. One little change.
Making a change in your body or for your body is a tough thing to do, but your mind is tough. Now, do you have psychologists on hand at the Nutrition Center? Because it seems to me that if you don't change the mindset, all of these changes are temporary.
Well, we don't have psychologists, but we do have clinical people that help people through those changes. So if you're, that's really what medical nutrition therapy is. It's a lot of encouragement. It's a lot of adjusting. It's a lot of checking in. It's a lot of being accountable. And Anna Maria really has to talk about that in detail.
Yeah, it's really a balance between looking at that behavioral piece and also really recognizing how you can make certain food choices that will encourage you to feel at your best, create a structure, as Liz was saying, sort of work to build a sense of consistency, which is what people often struggle with. You know, they really have this perception that they need to make a change and it's got to be all or nothing, because if it's not all or nothing, it's not going to, you know, progress as quickly as they would like. But really that often leads to burnout, and it leads to people sort of feeling like they don't have enough of a strong will to kind of continue to make the changes that they really want to see for themselves. So it really is very much about looking at the behaviors in a addition to talking about which foods are going to sort of be the most sustainable for the process.
Now, sustainability of the foods, that means the food has to taste good.
Yep.
It has to feel satisfying for the person who eats it. So let's get into brass tacks in a moment. We'll take a break here. 800-348-2551. We'll talk about those healthy foods that also happen to taste good. Liz Weibrecht is here. Anna Maria Moisa of the Nutrition Center in Western Massachusetts. We'll be right back. Well, this proves to be an educational experience for me. Believe it or not, I could probably eat healthier. So we have two experts in the studio here on a Food Friday, Liz Weibrecht and Anna Maria Moisa of the Nutrition Center in Western Massachusetts. You got a question about healthy eating? Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. This email came in from James in Smallwood. How much effect does the daily consumption of 3 to 5 drinks have on the gut biome? Do we understand yet how alcohol affects the biome?
So from my understanding, there is fairly little research on alcohol specifically in the gut microbiome. I think, you know, one of the things to be looking at with gut health is sort of maintaining a certain level of acidity within the stomach and the small intestine, because that's often what can really help to prevent bacteria overgrowth. So depending on what your alcohol habits are like, if you tend to sort of have large meals after drinking, which is sometimes
is that a good thing?
You know, it's certainly a fun thing, but if it's something that you're doing on a regular basis, it can potentially sort of throw off your gut microbiome with you know, the combination of the alcohol, especially if it's you know, high sugar drinks,
right.
High carbohydrate drinks like wine, beer, and followed by, you know, large meals afterwards type of thing.
So gluttony is really not the best policy.
Yeah, you want to you know, try to you know, even with alcohol, I think in moderation. I do think that there were some small studies that looked at moderate consumption of alcohol and a potential benefit for diversity of gut microbiome, but I think that intake of alcohol may have been smaller.
Okay.
So I think in the frequency of it is also important.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Before the break, we talked about the fact that, you know, if you're going to make changes like this and change what you eat, it has to taste pretty good and be a comfortable thing to eat. And Liz, you brought some stuff. It looks pretty good. Looks comfortable to me. What'd you bring?
Well, I brought a butternut squash mac and cheese. I thought it was going to be, you know, it's a little cold outside.
Yeah, it is.
So, you know, we're trying to, you know, there's when weather like this happens, we all want comfort food, right?
Yep.
But let's talk about those little changes. So I did whole grain pasta with there, and with the cheese, I mixed in some butternut squash. So you have the bulk with that, and the flavor is really mild and nice. And then I added some spinach in there too.
Very nice. It's a whole meal.
It's a whole meal.
In a Pyrex.
Yes.
Very nice.
Yes, yes.
Well, let's grab a call or two, and then we'll try some food. 800-348-2551 is the number. Victoria in Kingston. Hello, Victoria.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. You're on.
All right. So I have a sweet tooth. I really like anything sweet, but I'm also trying to lose a lot of weight this year because I've gained so much over the past few years. So I was wondering, what are some healthy ways I can make my drink sweeter? I work at Starbucks, so that makes things difficult, of course, but, you know, just healthier alternatives to sweetening things.
So if you like the taste of stevia, I think stevia is kind of one of the best alternatives out there. If you're wanting something that is sweet but also doesn't have any calories, I don't recommend going with the artificial sweeteners like sucralose or aspartame because of the sort of long-term health effects that have sort of been coming up with those. So one other really big thing that I would recommend for people who often say that they're experiencing really frequent sugar cravings is making sure that you are eating regularly and that you're eating foods that kind of help to sustain your hunger as long as possible. You know, kind of having these crashes if you're eating a lot of processed carbohydrates, refined carbohydrates, can lead to sugar cravings throughout the day. So you have to kind of think about the other types of foods that you're eating as well.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Now, Anna Maria, you counsel people on sort of getting the right balance in this gut biome. Mm-hmm. How do you go about doing that?
It's a very individualized approach. A lot of the times, people who are coming with imbalances or suspected imbalances will have symptoms that they're looking to correct. So, for instance, maybe they have some GI discomfort, like a lot of gas, a lot of bloating. They just feel uncomfortable after meals. And so we might do a dietary recall and sort of figure out if there are certain problematic foods.
Such as dairy, for instance.
Well, dairy could be one of them. Sometimes when people have these gut microbiome imbalances, that can be a result of bacterial overgrowth. And so what happens when bacteria are sort of exposed to certain foods is that they'll ferment these foods, which will give off gases. And those excess gases will kind of lead to that feeling of bloating and discomfort. And so sometimes it's really about treating those specific symptoms. Other times, people are just looking at ways that they can adjust their diet so that they're feeding their probiotic bacteria in the best way possible. You know, we all have these really beneficial bacteria living within our gut within our GI tract, specifically within the large intestine. And we want to make sure that we're eating the appropriate foods that keep these populations sustained.
Are you a proponent of probiotic supplements?
Only in certain circumstances. I think sometimes people who already have GI imbalances or bacterial overgrowth, you don't necessarily want to be pouring more probiotics into that environment. And so sometimes it might be beneficial to kind of correct that dysbiotic state, is what it's called, that state of imbalance, before potentially trying to add in more of those bacteria.
Liz Weibrecht, we mentioned killing some of these sugar pangs, these cravings for sweets. What's a good food that is not a sweet that might do that for you, that might give you that feeling of satisfaction?
So when I think of somebody who is really loves sweets and they're looking for that, incorporate more fruits, whole fruits, so you're getting the fiber and you're getting the micronutrients, vitamin, minerals in there. I also brought along today fruit parfaits.
Ooh.
So we have some fruit on the berries on the bottom with a yogurt and then a granola on the top. And the yogurt is not sweetened. Oftentimes, people will need some time to get used to a yogurt that's not sweetened if they've eaten flavored yogurt their entire life. And that's okay. So let's add things that are naturally sweet, that help with that sweetness. And then adding your own, maybe a little bit of maple syrup on top. But try to measure and know. And if you're trying to move away that earlier caller has mentioned gaining a lot of weight. So, to move away from that and change your palate just a little bit.
Yeah.
So you're not. So I would say adding fruits is a great way.
It looks like a beautiful presentation.
Well, you have to grab one and take a bite.
After the mac and cheese, we'll do that at the next break. Let's take a call. 800-348-2551. Ben in Saratoga. Ben, you're up.
Hey, how are you today?
Good.
Great. Thanks so much for taking my call. My question was to do with adhering to perhaps a more vegetarian diet. I'm a 52-year-old male, and I've just had a cardiac ablation surgery, and my blood lipids could use a little bit of work for presumably the saturates and the bad cholesterol. But I wanted to push a little bit more towards a less meat-intensive diet and a more vegetarian diet. Wanted to try and get a little balance and thinking in terms of how will that affect my gut biome as well.
Yeah, I think that really adding in more plant foods is going to do wonders for lowering cholesterol, especially if you're focusing on increasing soluble fiber sources. And soluble fiber is one of two kinds of dietary fiber. And basically what it does is it literally expands in your stomach and traps molecules of cholesterol. And so it acts to remove excess cholesterol through the stool so that it's not reabsorbed back into the bloodstream. So eating more beans and legumes, which happen to be also really high in protein. So if you're kind of looking to substitute with some, you know, some of the healthier vegetarian protein sources out there, legumes are a really nice way to choose a plant-based protein source that is not as processed as some of these, you know, artificial vegetarian meats that are getting more and more popular these days.
Absolutely. I totally concur with the idea of eat more whole foods and avoid the things that have the science experiment going on the side.
Exactly.
All right, Ben, thank you very much for the call. What do you think about those? I won't give the brand names, but the pseudo beef.
I think that there can be unhealthy food, whether it's made from plants or whether it's made from animal products.
And have you tried them?
I haven't, you know, I haven't gone to like a fast food restaurant, but I have had them, you know, I don't know if it was which brand it was. I know that there's a couple of them out there. And I certainly do think that they're tasty.
They're delicious.
You know, but I wouldn't necessarily recommend, okay, this is something that you should be having on a day-to-day basis for its health. You know, I think they're often really high in oil. They're made from really processed, protein sources. So it's not healthily ideal, let's say. But
is it any healthier than beef? I doubt it.
I mean, you know, I would say it's like a recreational food, something to enjoy on occasion, but it's, you know, it's not a, shouldn't be a staple.
Oftentimes we say a sometime food. So it's not something, and I think, you know, that goes back to the alcohol or it goes back to other things that, you know, there should be very little things that are completely off the table. It's all about balance and what do you do most of the time and then what do you do some of the time. So
do you ever struggle personally with the balance of your diet?
I don't.
You're all over it.
I don't. And I think that that's probably why I love nutrition so much, because I innately do it. And I also really love feeling good.
Wait, now how did you learn this, or did it come natural as a child?
I think that it was natural as a child, and then when I learned that there was actually things that you could follow and learn about, so that's really what I absorbed.
Back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Liz Weibrecht and Anna Maria Moisa of the Nutrition Center in Western Massachusetts join us today. Marcia in Altamont. Marcia.
Hi, I have a couple of questions. The first one has to do with what these ladies might think of the 5-2 fasting diet, and the other is about inflammation and what foods one might avoid to what foods might cause more inflammation in the body.
What's the 5-2 fasting diet? Anybody know?
Does it have something to do with eating differently for 2 days out of the week, I would assume?
Yes. Yes, it has to do with eating your regular diet 5 days a week, and then 2 days a week either fasting completely or fasting with a very limited calorie intake.
So that is a form of intermittent fasting, and that's one of another huge area of interest that actually does have some interesting science behind it, particularly when we're looking at longevity. You know, and I think it's everything is really individualized. I think sometimes being, you know, super disciplined in that kind of way can have its downsides. For instance, you know, individuals who kind of do that type of very strict eating within a certain timeline might find it hard to plan around social events, or, you know, there's a lot of issues that come up with the sustainability factor. So, you know, there are health benefits. I think that there are some downsides to it. So it really depends on the individual and what your ultimate goals are.
And also, we've read a little bit in the studies that understand that it is beneficial, but it's beneficial to a very small mm-hmm. portion of the population. Mm-hmm. So, my opinion is that it's getting a whole lot of press that makes it appear that it's helpful to a larger range of the population than it actually is indicating in the studies.
If you eat like a pig for 5 days and then take 2 days off, it can't be that great of a thing, right? No, not you, Marcia.
Yeah.
No.
If one does that, I apologize.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
I think that anything that's going to create a structure that makes you look at your food and your habits in a more mindful way is going to lead to some kind of results. And so if you're the type of person where you're, you know, eating really late at night every night, and so you decide to do intermittent fasting, and so you stop eating at a certain time, you know, of course that's going to lead to some results like weight loss, you know. But I think that we need to be cautious that there's a lot of ways to make changes, and mm-hmm. there's a lot of ways to make progress. And it's also important not to try to fit into a mold that, you know, might feel difficult to sustain long term.
And let's go back to the small changes, is mm-hmm. making sure that you're figuring out what your particular patterns are, and then make a small change within your pattern and in your daily life, because all of us are a little bit different. And that's the beauty of everybody.
Very good. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thanks, Marcia. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. A lot of fads out there.
Yes.
I hear people saying keto, 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 mm-hmm. and paleo, paleo, paleo. I don't even know what mm-hmm. the paleo is. What, you just eat raw meat?
Oh, it varies depending on who you ask. You know, I mean, if you look at like what the actual Paleolithic diet is, you know, within an anthropological context, there's just no universal. I mean, depending on where you
live.
Go
out and find a woolly mammoth and chow down.
Right, but depending on if you lived in an Arctic environment versus a tropical environment, the Paleolithic diet is really going to vary based off of where you are. So, you know, it's just a trend, and I think people are looking for a magic bullet. And
but the idea is let's go on the positive side of that kind of a diet. Eat local, mm-hmm. figure out how you're going, you know, eat in season, figure out what things you're avoiding, processed foods. So if you want to think of it that way, sure.
I got to tell you something. Ring dings are never out of season. Right?
There's a reason for that.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Maria in Schenectady. Maria.
Yes.
Hello.
Hi.
You're on.
Hello.
Okay. You want me to ask my question?
Sure.
Okay. I know someone who has a son, and the son is now 11, and he is obese. He's hungry all the time, et cetera. And recently I was told that when he was 2, he had migraine headaches, and so the doctors persuaded them to give him a medication that acted like a steroid, and it didn't help the migraines. But after a year, he stopped, and I have been told that it killed his metabolism. And I'm just trying to understand that and wondering, is that because of the microbiome in his stomach, or what can be done to bring back the metabolism?
Okay.
Well, so without knowing what that specific medication is, I can't, you know, say what effect it may have had on his metabolism. I mean, you know, for an 11-year-old kid who is sort of saying that he is constantly hungry, I mean, I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier is, you know, what types of foods is he eating? You know, is he sitting down and, you know, having foods that are lacking in fiber, are lacking in protein? You know, is he snacking instead of having full meals? You know, I would sort of wonder, you know, where what's going on with his appetite and whether or not even there's, you know, emotional eating or any other component that sort of might.
Yeah, well, his parents are, you know, trying to control his diet. I mostly see him more on vacation when he's free to do stuff. But they're giving him, you know, vegetables, cucumbers and carrots and that kind of stuff. He does eat other snacking, like a box of crackers and stuff like that. But I was just wondering how do you kill a metabolism and how do you bring it back?
Well, everybody has a metabolism, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can't kill a metabolism. I mean, you know, you can potentially, you know, have a slightly slower metabolism, but there's still ways to eat well and to exercise and, you know, to sort of increase your metabolic rate. You know, and exercise specifically, physical activity is a really good way to go about that.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. And he's getting into an age where he's going to developmentally, he's going to start noticing his body more. It's a really probably a good time to make, you know, if the parents are open to it, for him to see a clinician and doing family counseling to figure out if there are ways that he can help, because you're kind of in a zone that would be a natural change zone, and that would that might be a good suggestion.
Let's take a quick break here. Liz Weibrecht is here. Anna Maria Moisa of the Nutrition Center in Western Massachusetts. I kind of have some of the mac and cheese, so we'll take a break. 800-348-2551. One 800-348-2551. It's Food Friday, and we talk nutrition today with Liz Weibrecht and Anna Maria Moisa of the Nutrition Center in Western Massachusetts. I got to tell you, Liz, the mac and cheese is very nice.
Isn't it nice?
Yes.
Do you feel really heavy after having a couple bites? You know, when you have regular mac and cheese, you know, you're just like, oh, I really want more, but I'm so full.
Here's a newsflash: I don't really eat mac and cheese very much.
Ah.
But this is tapering my you know, my general yen for ringdings. So it's pretty good. I got to say, it's very comforting.
Okay, so we have some onions and some garlic. There's some chicken broth in there. So a bunch of butternut squash, some sharp cheddar cheese, and spinach, and the macaroni, and a little bit of toasted panko breadcrumbs.
And
on
that's
the top.
Whole wheat
pasta.
And I got to tell you, the spinach is a great touch.
It's nice.
Love it a lot.
And it adds a little color.
Indeed.
And eat a rainbow.
We'll have dessert. Speaking of a rainbow, we'll have some of the berry yogurt in a little bit. Our number is 800-348-2551, and we'll blast through as many calls as we can. Little stack of email here. This one's from Burger. I'm curious to know what the Nutrition Center's crew is saying about the whole premise of intermittent fasting. Well, we discussed that as a viable, wholesome way of both maintaining health and weight. And I think this one came in before we discussed it, but you can give us the Cliff Note version again about that.
Yeah, so again, you know, I take a general non-diet approach, and I think, you know, I like to look at the behavioral piece of it. In terms of the science, I think it's interesting, you know, and I'm never one to stop somebody from experimenting with, you know, different structures for their eating habits, but I think getting too rigid can be problematic.
This one's from Mark. Fast food establishments seem to be everywhere these days. No matter how hard we try, we just can't seem to get away from their tempting advertising. How often should any of us be eating fast food, and are some fast foods better than others?
Well,
No is a simple answer. You can always say that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you have to weigh everything. If you really love fast food and it's something that, I mean, you can't imagine ever living your life without, you know, not going to McDonald's ever again. You know, it's maybe something that you know, you realize, okay, this might not be the healthiest choice, but it's worth it to me for that moment. And it's the same thing with alcohol. I mean, I'm not going to tell you that alcohol isn't, you know, a neurotoxin, but, you know.
It's a neurotoxin?
Well, I mean, it's not great for your brain, you know, and I mean, it's.
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
But you know, we all make these choices. So in terms of the fast food, whether some is healthier, you know, looking for lower saturated fat, looking for, you know, staying away from the fried foods, you know, if you're concerned about preservatives, you know, that's a big issue there too. So, you know,
so you're not really going to be running to the fast food joint personally.
Yeah, I mean, it's not my top choice.
Okay,
no,
fair
no,
enough. This one is from Elizabeth and Troy. People commonly go for chocolate for uplift and comfort. Is it true that chocolate doesn't do what we're looking for, but cheese and something else do?
Well, I think that dark chocolate has the most health benefits that you would find. So I guess it depends on what kind of chocolate that you're eating.
Okay.
I am a chocolate lover.
Oh, yeah.
So I love dark chocolate. And, you know, I try to incorporate, you know, any kind of nuts and little dried fruits in there just to, you know, shake
coconut
it up
chips.
A little bit.
Just to ease your guilt
chips.
A little bit. Good for you.
So, yeah.
I think it's a good go-to, especially a dark chocolate, low sugar dark chocolate. As a treat, you know, it's a good,
every day.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
You look pretty healthy. This one's from Janice in Cooperstown. At what level is visceral fat a concern? And just a side note, Visceral Fat was my third album. That was the title.
Oh.
Did you know that? Yeah.
No, wow.
At what level is visceral fat a concern?
Visceral fat is certainly a concern. I mean, when you're, you know, if you're, I guess the major question is when we're looking at body composition, having some fat on your body is normal and fine. It's a matter of specifically when fat tends to deposit along your organs. That abdominal fat tends to be the one that's the most problematic.
Yeah.
So that one, I think, in terms of, you know, if we're looking at health concerns, that would be the one that I would sort of be more focused on.
Fair enough. This one says, and this one's from Emma, any nutrition info on how to improve the effectiveness of antidepressants? SSRI, NDRIs, etc.
I think that with antidepressants, I sort of want to leave those recommendations to physicians. Yeah.
This one's from Gal in Albany. Can you discuss the brain-gut connection and the vagus nerve? Is there a particular diet that might ease depression? Another question, similar.
Yeah, so I think that the connection between gut health and mood, you know, anxiety and depression is another really great area of interest right now in research and nutrition, certainly. But there isn't, we don't really have a whole lot of understanding about how we might be able to manipulate the gut microbiome to sort of improve mood. What we know is, the person who emailed asked specifically about the vagus nerve. So that's actually a set of paired nerves that wanders throughout the body. That's why it's called the vagus nerve, the wandering nerve. And it actually helps the gut and gut microbes communicate with the rest of the body through the central nervous system. And so a lot of a number of chronic diseases have now been shown to be related to issues like decreased function of the vagus nerve. So the health of the vagus nerve is something that people are really looking into. But in terms of diet, again, feeding your probiotic bacteria are going to ensure that they are creating a sufficient quantity of neurochemicals like serotonin and GABA, which are directly related to moods, mood disorders like anxiety and depression, where they tend to be lowered.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551, and let's hit the phones again. Beth in the Berkshires. Beth, you're on.
Hi, I was a type 2 diabetic following the ADA and my doctor's recommendations, but my health just continued to decline. So doing a lot of my own research, I tried low-carb, moderate protein, healthy fats with intermittent fasting and improved amazingly. Within 2 weeks, my A1C normalized, weight was melting off me, but still, my doctor's not on board and thinks that I need to stick with the standard American diet. So I guess my question is, how do I get my doctor or any doctor to support me so I'm not flying without a net? And when do you think the medical community will catch up with real viable alternatives? I'm just worried acting as my own doctor, but I know that I'm better off. I know I'm healthier than I've ever been, but I'm creating my own protocol with no support.
Yeah, I think it's a tough place to be in, especially, you know, if you feel like you're kind of monitoring your own results, and you know, you're not quite wanting to be on your own with that. So obviously, you know, the first line of action might be finding a physician that at least you might be able to work with, that even if you potentially don't share the same thought, that maybe they're open to discussing the research with you. You know, if there's something that you're curious about and you kind of want to at least have that sort of somebody who's open to talking about the science, again, even if it's perhaps, you know, it might be a very much about the fact that the science itself is inconclusive. And I think even within the nutrition world, there's a lot of questions that are still sort of unanswered. So, you know, I recognize that it's a tough place to be in, but you know, I think it's important to try to make changes, to have a medical team that at least you feel like you can communicate with.
Well, thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Nancy in Schenectady. Nancy, you're on.
Hi. A while back, the problem of flatulence came up in the discussion.
Yes.
But I had an issue related to that I was wondering. Oh, you were talking about the biome in the gut responding to things, some imbalance creating the flatulence. But the thing I'm wondering about is we've been cutting down on meat and using more of the legumes and things like that, as well as the cabbage family. We've been using a lot of cabbage family vegetables, a lot of things that come in that overwinter well.
I got to say, the cabbage is probably the culprit here, right?
Well, I would say, you know, a lot of the times people kind of, again, and this is maybe one of those all or nothing kind of conversations with fiber, I really recommend that people sort of ease into it and they're not all of a sudden, you know, going from, you know, 10 grams of fiber per day, you know, 10, 15 grams, which is kind of what the average American gets, to switching to, you know, eating beans and legumes and all these cruciferous vegetables and having, you know, having all of this dietary fiber that your system just isn't used to processing. So a lot of the time,
actually, we've gradually, so it's not like we did it very suddenly.
The other issue that comes up is that sometimes people might have sensitivity to some of these highly fermentable foods. So a lot of what I do in my counseling is when we look at a dietary recall, try to figure out which ones might be the likely culprits and eliminate those so that you can still sort of have as much diversity without the discomfort.
But it's the beans and the cabbage, right? I mean, right?
Well, it's likely if you're eating a lot of beans and cabbage, you're going to have the flatulence.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Well, Nancy, hey, good luck. Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Quickly, we'll jump over to Hudson and John. You're on. John, go ahead. Hello. Hi. There goes my...
How's it going? I've been doing the keto diet. You've already commented on it a bit. I'd just like to maybe hear some more That's about it, you know?
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Well, do you have any specific questions? I mean, with the keto diet, generally speaking, it's a high-fat diet. And so you know, I generally don't work with the keto diet because I find that it's very extreme. But usually to be into ketosis, you need to be consuming 60% of your calories from fat, you know, which is, again, a very, very different than you know, a sort of what I would consider
not
a balanced,
a great diet.
Well-rounded diet.
Yep.
But you know, I know a lot of people are sort of they're attracted to it because of the sort of weight loss potential. But I think that it's not the ideal long-term.
And I think that people grasp onto it because it's something that they feel like that they could do, but then they don't know what the next step is. Like, how long are you going to stay in that? And it's not...
It can't be forever, right?
It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be, but metabolically, it's a tough diet on your body.
Okay. Well, let's quickly grab one more here because we're almost done here. We only have about 2 minutes. Judy in Amsterdam. Judy.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
So I'm curious what the ladies have to say about collagen supplement.
Collagen supplement.
Somebody.
So I tend not to do a whole ton of supplementation in my practice. You know, I don't sell supplements. I sometimes recommend them to individuals who, you know, who might be looking for, you know, specific correction to, you know, particular ailments. But what is it, what question do you have about the collagen specifically?
Well, I just got introduced to this idea from by the way, I'm 77 years old, so I've been going to this woman for a long time.
Yeah.
She delivered my last daughter, or my only daughter. And I see her regularly for my well woman checkup. And over the last 2 months, and I just went to see her this Tuesday, I made an appointment, and she was going on about starting to take collagen powders.
Okay.
And how wonderful it was.
All right,
making
Judy, we only have about 15 seconds left here, so let's just see what our experts say about collagen.
No
yeah.
problem.
I mean, generally speaking, I think that supplements are not highly regulated. Unless there's really solid research on something, I'm sort of cautious about recommending it,
okay.
Unfortunately.
All right, you two, how do people find the Nutrition Center on the web?
So it's www.thenutritioncenter.org.
Thank you both very much for being here. Next time, bring a copy of that book.
Yeah, if anybody's interested in my book, you can preview it on Amazon. You know, it's a fantastic topic.
Okay, well, it sounds like a fun read.
It's definitely informative.
Okay, after dinner reading. Support comes from AGS Home Chef in Hillsdale, New York, for cooking classes and 2 designer kitchens taught by national and local specialists. HillsdaleGeneralStore.com for what's cooking. Dr. Theta Patterson at Associates, a medical practice specializing in dermatology and dermatologic surgery, serving the Capital Region and surrounding areas since 1995. When it comes to skin, this practice is in theta patterson.com. Thanks again to Liz Weibrecht and Anna Maria Moisa of the Nutrition Center in Western Massachusetts for being here. Thanks, Zach Malloy. Good engineering this week, sir. Kayleen White took the calls. Jim Lavoulis, our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Have a splendid weekend. Join us Monday at 2 for a Medical Monday.